This is Countdown to Exegesis, your listen-along Steely Dan podventure. Join me, Andrew Souter.
And me, Ollie Piper, as we explore the Steely Dan discography track by misanthropic track. But wait, there's a twist, a gimmick, a delicious dash of jeopardy.
That's right, because while Ollie has the Steely Dan back catalogue tattooed on the soft side of his soul, I'm new to the Dan and would like to keep it that way.
This means Andrew is hearing every song for the first time. Will he love it? Will he hate it? Should I care? Let's find out.
Exegesis.
Countdown to Exegesis is a Patreon-supported podcast. Pledge just £3.50 a month to unlock bonus episodes and make our little hearts sing. Just visit patreon.com/countdowntoexegesis. Hello, and welcome to Countdown to Exegesis, the podcast in which I, Andrew Souter, and my friend and mentor, Oliver Piper, throw ourselves to the wolves of our own minds, trekking through the Steely Dan discography, track by wearisome track. Today, we're talking about a grimy little number called Everyone's Gone to the Movies, and we're joined by two very, very special guests. We have Anne and Rachel from Steely Anne, South Central Minnesota's premier Steely Dan tribute band. Hello, Anne. Hello, Rachel.
Hello. Hello.
How are you doing today?
Very well.
Good, good. Ollie is also here as per usual.
Hello. Should we just own the technical difficulties and tell the listeners that we're repeating the same intro we recorded about 40 minutes ago?
Sure.
Because I'm a fool and I have no idea how computers work. But anyway, we're back, and this time technology is on our side.
This is going to be liquid podcasting from now on.
It's going to be beyond liquid. It's plasma. Plasmatic pod, this is. Anne and Rachel.
Yes.
Let's repeat your wonderful stories about Steely Dan and how you both came to Steely Dan. You are both now in a Steely Dan tribute band, which is awesome. But how did, start with Anne, how did you come to Steely Dan? How did Steely Anne happen?
Was a conversation. The topic or the idea of a Steely Dan tribute band was a conversation that I had with several local musicians in passing for seriously about 10 years. We just would keep, you know, when we'd cross paths, we'd say, oh my gosh, that mutual love of Steely Dan, we had turned that into a band. And it was just sort of a vision and kind of a joke until one of those musicians hit a point in his life where he has teenage daughters who won't generally speak to him. And he said, I think that now is the time to do this Steely Dan tribute band so that I have a way to, perform something that like my family wants to come see. And we briefly tried to get her to be a backup singer, but that was like too far. That went too far. So anyway, that's how the band was born, was this kind of thing we'd chatted about casually for 10 years, and then all of a sudden all things came together and it was time.
Do teenagers are they seriously into Steely Dan nowadays?
I mean, apparently bass player said I think we should do this, it wasn't so much that his daughters are into Steely Dan, but he has like a friend of a friend who works at a record store, and they were like, all the young people are coming and asking for Steely Dan. There's a movement afoot. So
yeah.
some young people.
There's certainly an undercurrent. I mean, buoyed by the likes of Twitter and Instagram. And Rachel, how we were talking before the pod, you said that you are the Andrew of this dynamic.
Yes. After, as Anne spoke about before, after their first performance, once the band had converged and rehearsed, she said it became clear she wanted a fuller sound behind her own vocals, more female backing vocals. So she asked me if I would join, and I think I knew 5 Steely Dan songs when she asked me, and now I know them all. So, yes.
Great. And what a song to talk about today?
Today everyone's gone to the movies, right?
Yeah, no, you're quite right. Yeah, we can say anything we want.
I listened to this. A couple of hours ago, and
for the first time,
and immediately, like straight away I started laughing, both because of the bobbing, lilting Latin thing, which just really, really blindsided me. I was not expecting it at all. And then the sort of egregious lyrics, it really, really tickled me. So I'd like to say, compared to last episode where we were talking about Dr. Wu, I feel surprisingly positive. It really, really tickled me, this song.
Like laugh out loud.
Yeah, I laughed almost immediately when he started going, "Kids, if you wanna play," you know, it really did it for me. I'm not sure now, having listened to it about 6 or 7 times, I think I probably have my fill. But so I was just wondering, Anne and Rachel, do you find this song funny? Or is it a what I like to call one of Steely Dan's classic unfunny funny songs?
I don't think it's funny. I mean, I think it's a classic, like, Steely Dan celebrating the depravity of humanity kind of song. Turns it on its ear acoustically. And no, I wouldn't say funny. That would not be me. Anne, you think it's funny?
I mean, it irritates me. I get about the giggling, sort of.
Yeah.
I hate how much it's stuck with me. Like, I don't want to think that it's doing its job as a catchy tune, but I think it is. It sticks with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I feel mixed. I can't weigh in on whether I think it's funny or not. Do you mean funny like you're laughing at it or with it?
At mainly.
Yeah.
Okay. It was just, I felt like I was listening to something off like a South Park episode or something. Mm-hmm. Just the sort of juvenile giggling of it,
yes,
really tickled me. I don't know why.
So maybe you just heard this song for the first time,
mm-hmm,
and you've heard the studio album, but not any other version.
There are other versions.
This is the first song Steely Dan ever recorded. This was recorded first, and then it didn't end up until this album. But it's even more carnival sounding. Their first recording of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, very weird. Mm-hmm. Very weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, we should perhaps make you listen to the demo, mm-hmm, Andrew, because it casts the song in a new light. But I'm baffled that you think this is funny, I have to say.
Can I clarify? It's not that I think that it's not that I think they're making a really sophisticated joke which is tickling me from rib to rib. It's not that. It's that there's something so you know how brutality can be amusing.
No
I don't mean
go on. Yes, Andrew.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying treating people brutally is funny, but what I mean is sometimes if somebody just says something that's like so outlandishly horrible, it can really catch you off guard.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, gallows humor.
See, I feel. So we were talking about how the dynamic is that Anne is Ollie and I am Rachel, but I think in this conversation, it's flipped.
Mm-hmm.
I can see Anne nodding understandingly at what I'm saying, and Rachel and Ollie are looking at me like I'm fucking insane.
No, but we have just flipped, because I do understand what you're saying. Like,
yeah.
Brutality done well, or with this like certain over the top, brutality is like it's cartoonish.
Yeah,
we can.
Thank you for saying it way more succinctly than I did.
But I wouldn't, you know, the subject matter. I'm just wondering if you've read the lyrics. Like, do you know what this is about?
Yeah, it's about a child groomer running a local cinema. I'm not smiling because I find the concept of that amusing. I think that's very, very bad. It's very bad behavior.
Okay.
Okay, but yeah, now I'm fully on your side.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not the content that's funny. Like, the content isn't funny.
No.
The treatment of that content in an annoyingly, I'm not going to be able to find the word. So many words.
Sure.
In their classic overconfident, nasally fucking way.
Snide.
Yeah, snide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Snide.
Yeah.
See how mad it makes me?
Yeah.
Snide.
To Steely Dan, there's nothing funnier than human depravity. There's nothing funnier. It's the funniest thing in the world how low we will go.
I mean, I often think of them, you know, when there's these little turns of phrase or they're being weirdly misogynistic at every turn. I often think of them like laughing to themselves in the writing room. I can't decide with this one whether they thought they were writing whether they were writing something funny or whether they were writing something. I don't know. Whether they're making a serious point.
I think that's really strange, Ollie, because like surely of all the songs we've heard where they're writing about nasty stuff, this one is obvious. It's like so self-consciously horrible.
Yeah,
that they must have been laughing up their sleeves. Like,
do you think?
What you think? Yeah. This is like a denunciation of child abuse. It's meant to be like a fucking Tracy Chapman song where we sort of like tugging at our heartstrings.
Pure self amusement. This is
No,
they're delighted with themselves with this song.
Yeah,
yeah, they're having a great time.
Is what annoys me.
Yeah,
that they are so delighted with themselves.
Yeah.
So I think I find it funny and annoying at the same time, depending on like.
Yeah.
England.
But I also, and when I think about Steely Dan, I'm often horrified how relatable the characters are. And I want to but no, I mean it really. Like, he's singing this song because in it makes me feel like, hey, who didn't have that uncle who popped on some porn in the den, you know? Like, seriously, this is what it is. It's like, hey kids. You're almost 18, but you're not yet. You can't go out with the big kids to go drinking, but we're going to go duck behind this alley here and do almost grown-up things. And it's just, he's singing it like it's just a normal thing that, you know. and I think that's so true of Steely Dan. Nothing is presented as shocking in anything that they do. And none of their bard tales are presented to shock you. It's just, it is what it is, man. And I think this definitely falls under that category.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I've othered this song in the catalog because I'm like, it's so, the subject matter's so depraved. Like,
so you need to remove it to allow yourself to remain a Steely Dan fan. Is that what you're saying? Are you compartmentalizing this a little bit?
quite possibly.
I think it sounds like it.
I think
me and my therapist hat on.
Honestly, the mental gymnastics this guy does on a weekly basis.
All I'm saying is that okay, so Steely Dan has this demimond of characters called like Crispy Steve and you know, pimps and gun toters and all the rest of it, and that's almost kind of like Pulp Fiction. Like, you can imagine it in film noir or Pulp Fiction, or as in the actual paper Pulp Fiction, that sort of stuff. It's kind of influenced by the sci-fi they were so into and sort of gritty gangster flicks or whatever else. This takes several leaps forward in terms of depravity of subject matter. It goes from these almost kind of cartoonish characters that inhabit their world to a very specific and very specifically depraved and upsetting story. So that's why I kind of other it, because it's kind of like, you know, for all of Steely Dan's terrible, you know, they stick their tentacles into terrible parts of humanity, but you know, so for the most part, it is kind of cartoonish, and this is not cartoonish.
This is cartoonish.
Yeah, I agree. I think Mr. LePage is very cartoonish. It's, I think he fits right in there with the others.
Yeah.
Well, from a woman growing up, or you know, young woman growing up in a 70s and 80s perspective, like it's not that different than what if I put myself in the, not the narrator's position, but the subject or the, mm-hmm. of the story position, it's not that different than like Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
Like if there's one woman character who's experiencing all the Steely Dan songs, and in this song she's maybe 17, and in Ricky she's maybe 19 or whatever, it's not that different. In fact, this is a lot easier to take. This one, no one's having to sort of, can I say, like, no one's having to blow anyone to get this over.
Right.
But isn't that what the apple bobbing is? You know, there's the reference to bobbing apples.
That's a whole, yeah, there's a, like,
Sorry, this isn't the most important thing about what you just said.
Disagreement about the lyric, right? I mean, yeah.
Because the whole bobbing for apples, 16 or more, sorry, only have eight, is like, right? Is it gang rape? Is it the millimeter of film?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I just haven't done enough research.
Or are we just pulling you away from a party to come here? Is that, you know, it's, yeah, the bobbing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And besides, it can wait. So. Yeah.
I believe the 8mm, 16mm thing is, well, you know, I'm going from internet lore here,
yeah,
so it might be wrong, but it's like cheap films are on 8mm as opposed to 16mm. That's where they kind of, you know, hold up the big sign saying this is porn. It's definitely showing porn. But you know,
yeah, because it was really, sure. Treading such a fine line up to that point in the lyric.
right.
Anyway, I haven't done my facts. I haven't done my song facts. You know, this is all great chat. Rachel has also Rachel, you've just come straight in and like given a better fact than I could, which is I did not know this was the first song that Steely Dan ever recorded.
Uh-huh.
I have heard the demo version, which is, I don't know. Yeah, it casts it in a new light for me. But would you like to know some really, really boring facts?
Would I?
About this song. The metal leg fanzine.
Oh, God.
Come on now.
The amount of times in my recent life that I've had to hear the phrase, the Steely Dan fanzine metal leg, is just like...
The Steely Dan fanzine metal leg ran a poll of its female subscribers.
Yeah.
And this song plays second worst. one of the aforementioned female subscribers called it maybe the strangest thing ever recorded.
Right.
That's the only fact I have about the actual song. But would you like to know about some of Donald Faken's favorite movies?
I'm a little nervous, but okay.
He said, I loved all those swinging London movies, stuff like Georgie Girl, Tom Jones, and Billy Liar. I was a very big Harold Pinter fan in high school, so I liked The Caretaker and The Birthday Party.
I'm surprised.
And he also mentions It's a Gift by W.C. Fields. Mm. Oh, right. and he said, Walter likes very peculiar movies. And didn't elaborate.
Yeah. He's Mr. LePage's assistant.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. Look at it.
This is something I find really strange about this song. Like, I think a really weird thing about this song is that it's, you know, like you can imagine them in their writer's room. They're like, okay, what filthy pool of human behavior should we write about today, Walter? You would imagine that they would do it from the perspective of Mr. LePage, like a Randy Newman thing where you're, you know, inhabiting the depraved character. But instead it's like some weird accomplice guy. Yeah. Like Donald Fagen is like Mr. LePage's like marketing team. He's just, yeah, like a barker. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He's just like walking the streets, right. Just being like, hey, come on, kids. You know,
yes.
Very odd.
It's implausible. Like it doesn't work. I don't think scenes like this work that way generally.
Grooming.
Well, but that there's a front person, like, right? I mean, a barker.
That is, I think, the single creepiest thing about this song.
It is.
It's that Mr. There. LePage is not the narrator.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of things you see online, it's like it talks as if Mr. LePage, this is Mr. LePage delivering these lines, and this is Mr. LePage's story. It's not. There's someone else. There's someone else, and what, you know, what is he, and why is he? You know, the lyric eye of this song is, like you say, marketing manager. So, just talking about what other people talk about again. I do a lot of like staring at reviews and staring at the internet when I'm doing research for these episodes. And another thing that people say is that, you know, they always say, oh, this is a classic example of Steely Dan being, you know, it's ugly lyrics with like slick, clean music, or in this case, kind of like jaunty calypso influenced music. Do you agree with that? Do you think this is? Do you think this is like ugly lyrics, happy music, or ugly lyrics? Is it that classic dichotomy? Because I don't, basically. I think this music sounds swampy and evil as all hell.
Yeah, yeah. It's it sounds like Something Wicked This Way Comes, right? Like that novel or that film. I mean, the kind of the creepiness. It's a creepy carnival. It's a creepy. It's supposed to sound jaunty and like playground children drawing in, but it's actually. It's got a real evil vibe to it. Yeah. Yeah. I think that I'm annoyed that the chorus gets stuck in my head. You know, I don't like that. And, you know, but yeah, I don't agree that it's that classic because the music's off-putting as well to me.
But just as a thought experiment, can you not imagine Paul Simon singing that chorus? I just think it sounds like one of those really shitty Paul Simon album tracks where it's like a sort of jaunty sing-along with vibes and like Caribbean and inverted commas percussion and so on. I think, you know, so to me it does sound genuinely jaunty and
really
and fun. Yeah.
So what it made me think of, what made me wonder is, was Dr. John a thing at this point? Like, was Dr. John releasing records?
Yeah.
Because it's got that kind of swampy the bayou, the sounds of the bayou and all the ghosts that linger in the swamp. It's got that kind of sound to me. Do you know what I mean? It's and the kind and like you say, the creepy kind of carnival sound. It made me think, Steely Dan trying to be a little bit Dr. John here.
I think the only thing I think is creepy about this musically is when he sings "Come On," and then there's that weird like juddery saxophone.
Yeah,
it's like "Come On," you know. Again, it did make me laugh. I'm sorry. I think maybe I've reached I've taken Steely Dan to task in the past for playing with depravity and so on, but maybe this is what I've been waiting for all along. Is just total. Like
a torrent,
pure swamp. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like you've been sitting under the swamp pipe, the sump pipe.
Yeah,
it's just been dripping like water torture onto your head.
Yeah,
for months and months and months.
Yeah,
and finally, like you're delighted.
It's burst.
That it's burst and covered you head to toe in human shit.
Yeah. I'm having a great time. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
His ham-fisted exegesis in last month's Vanity Fair made me cringe.
Do you have a vibe, Ollie?
Do I have a vibe? That's a good question. No, I forgot to write one. So give me yours.
Well, luckily for you, I've got two. My original vibe was hiding in plain sight, but I decided that would be too, it's sort of tempting legal action from Fagin. In other words, I'm implying that he's a child groomer. Well, no, I'm saying that was my vibe. And then I was like, no, that's no good. So then I changed it to Steely Dan the Musical gets taken off Broadway, because I think this has got a Showtime cabaret feel to it. And I like the idea of Steely Dan the Musical. There's some great grimacing going on from everybody. It's like, we're watching Steely Dan the Musical, then suddenly the child catcher comes out. Donald Fagen is dressed as the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. They start singing this song and everybody's like, no, we've got to shut this production down right away. So that's my vibe.
Yeah.
I don't suppose you came up with a vibe, Steely Ann. We didn't fill you in on the details.
I'm looking for the word to pair with predatory, because which sounds obvious, but where I think the predatory feel comes through strongest is in that weird little thing that I think you just referenced, Andrew, the weird like bug
bug sound thing, but then also the vibes layer on top of those lovely harmonies at the end. There's something like super aggressive and too bright about them. And both of those, the vibes and that little weird bug sound, make it predatory. But it's also, there's also a liltingly predatory. That's the vibe I would assign to it.
Yeah, what a haunting phrase. Liltingly predatory.
I don't like, this isn't like a snap your fingers and clap your hands kind of song.
You should have seen me earlier.
You've been on your little adventure, but for me it's like lean against a wall, snapping your fingers. It's slightly intimidating. You know, it does have a finger snapping sort of thing, but it's more of a kind of like, I'm gonna snap my fingers and stare.
Yes, right. Like
slit eyes at people going past me.
A question that we haven't asked is, do you cover this song?
Ah, good question.
No.
No, not at the moment. We don't. Mm. And I gotta say, I think it would be rejected by the band if it were brought in. Be after a really fun 45-minute dissection along these lines, I think. Like, we did briefly cover Gaslighting Abby, and I think it was maybe a similar process in terms of getting there, getting everybody on board, and then breaking up with it kind of one by one. So,
I mean, are your shows are your shows like feel good sort of shows? Are you leaning into the kind of the happy, funky side of Steely Dan?
I would say no. I mean, which by design, you know, we're usually, if we're bantering, which is pretty minimal, we're welcoming, you know, thanking the Steely Dan fans and then the partners of the Steely Dan fans who got dragged here, and in between song reading some of the reviews that are just about how awful it is to listen to Steely Dan, you know, like, so I think we're not leaning. I think we're leaning the other way. We're leaning into like, we know what we're doing. And we know that this, we know it's not pleasant for you. Thank you for being here.
Yeah. I think that's our approach as well.
Yeah.
It's really strange though. I don't know if you've seen the live show / TV special called something like Steely Dan's Plush TV Jazz Rock Party. And it's Steely Dan performing songs and then interviews with Steely Dan being misanthropic and making jokes that no one understands. And then they'll interview the fans like outside the shows, and the fans are just like, they must have cherry picked who they interviewed, but it's like one of them thinks they're going to see Al Stewart and doesn't actually know who Steely Dan is. And, she's like, I really dig them. I first heard like Year of the Cat, and they're like, no, that's Al Stewart. and then some of them are like, oh, they're just groovy, they're just chill, they're just laid back. You know, I like to smoke a doobie and just sit back and listen to Steely Dan. I'm like, do you know what you're hearing? Do you know what you're engaging with? Like, this is horrible stuff in some regards. But you know, they're just like, yeah, cool jazz rock. But there is a side of Steely Dan. You know, if you present the veneer of Dan, you can, you know, it can sound like that, I guess, which is part of the magic.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm asking is, like, did you choose your set lists? But I mean, you've said it sounds like it's part kind of performance art, which I mean in a good way, but you know, you could choose a set list which is pure party Dan, you know.
Yeah, I think the jazz guys, who are the instrumentalists in the band, were not, like, they specifically rejected some things like Black Friday because it's just too, there's too much of an expectation that it be covered like the original, and they wanted us and we wanted to do things that allowed them to interpret solos in these really jazz heavy, almost academic ways. So that's fun. And then part of the selection process too is what we think would pair, not maybe pair well with female lead vocals, but what becomes more interesting with a female, essentially like a doubled female lead, without any changing of the lyrics, without any wry winking at the audience, just like straight on doing this
like appropriation is, I think, the best term I can come up with. Because without an agenda, without trying to make the audience laugh or feel shame or, you know, anything, but just delivering it. And some songs lend themselves better than others to that. So like Black Friday, not that much fun in that respect. Hey 19, like really fun in that respect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we've introduced a new feature, which is that we solve problems, Steely Dan related problems sent in by listeners, which we started off calling Agony Dan. I've actually forgotten what we ended up calling it. What did we actually call it?
I think we ended up calling it I Never Seen You Looking So Down, My Funky One.
Yes, I've Never Seen You Looking So Bad, My Funky One. Okay, yeah. So that's this. But I would like to be the funky one for this. No, because this links to what you were saying with how you kind of take ownership of Steely Dan's lyrics. Is that fair to say from a feminist perspective? You know, and how you approach the pricklier sides of Steely Dan's material. And my question is, you know, I've gone through a journey in this podcast. So starting off as the kind of cartoon Steely Dan defender and trying to defend Steely Dan when the constant misogyny comes up, being reminded of the constant misogyny, and gradually kind of stopping trying to defend it. I've sort of given up on that. But I just want, from, you know, as two schooled feminists, like, how should I be approaching the more objectionable side of Steely Dan's lyrics? So you are the agony aunt.
Authentically. I mean, I think you let it hit you the way it hits you, right? I know that, for example, singing, say, Ricky, I really just wanted to try to get myself in his headspace. I mean, I tried to do it in a way that I wanted to sound like I meant it, you know, like I wasn't trying to, right, like you said, like not poke fun or... and in some songs, actually, we did that, though, like with Green Earrings, we have kind of, and Peg, too, we start and end our last show with kind of a sing-song unison Mean Girls kind of feeling almost. But I think that, to return to your question, how do you take the more prickly or difficult Steely Dan lyrics? Just as you do, like any art, right? I mean, it's not perfect. It is what it is. And I don't know, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't what it was as well. So
is, you know, in the world of Steely Anne, is performing Steely Dan a way of kind of coming to terms with your enjoyment of Steely Dan and the uglier sides of Steely Dan?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. When the now bass player for us first approached me about doing this, I was at a point personally where I really needed comfort music. And the thought had occurred to me, it's too bad that can't be Steely Dan because the lyrics are so heinous. And then that coincided with him saying, like, let's do this project. And I was so thrilled that I would get to immerse myself in this music, not embracing the lyrics or ignoring the lyrics, but like cleaning them. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's safe to say, or accurate to say, that it does that same thing for some female audience or some audience members in general. I know after the last show, I had more than one person come up and acknowledge that in some way, you know, like, thank you for that was part of the fun of and the enjoyment of the night, was to see how these, you know, misogynist things were rendered. And not that they were inverted, but it was just different.
Mm. Mm. I have to be honest, like, I'm not someone who usually listens to lyrics, right? So I've been listening to Steely Dan for nigh on 20 years, and just kind of grooving along, enjoying the music, and never really, until we do this podcast, actually really sitting down and making sense of the lyrics. So I wouldn't have known that Ricky Don't Lose That Number was a sexist song before doing, you know, before sitting down and actually going over the lyrics in this podcast. Because I don't know, and I think I think for a lot of people see it as like a sweet love song. I don't know, but you don't even know
your mind.
I was just listening to that episode, you know, actually yesterday, preparing for this conversation today, and I disagreed with so much of your take on that one. I don't think it's. I thought that rather than a shyness with the we could play games, I don't know, it's more like it's a passive aggressive, like it's just a sex pest. He's just a sex pest. Oh, just did. It's not, it doesn't feel sweet. It feels like, well, when you change your mind, I'll be right here, sweetie. So go on, you know, it didn't feel vulnerable at all. And that I didn't see a sweetness or a vulnerability in his requests. It was an absolute assurance, not that he is owed anything, but just that you're going to change your mind. When you do, yeah. Here's my number, etc. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
sorry.
You're quite. I'm trying to remember what exactly we said, but
I'm hurriedly going through my memories of that episode. Like, come on, surely you. Surely I pointed out the nascent sexism of this song, but I don't think I did.
I think you probably did more than me.
That part in particular, I agree with you. I was like, we have very different, like, you know, contexts for, I think, where that.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
Coming from.
Yeah.
I think walking around in a woman's body too, you know, we'll give you a perspective on things, you know. Yeah.
One thing I actually, kind of leading on from that, that a lot of journalistic takes on this song that I was looking at while researching, they kind of lump it in with Hey 19, Janie Runaway. They call it like sugar daddy songs, aging Lothario songs, kind of saying when there's actually something kind of far more sinister afoot.
So many. Hey 19 is so transactional, and this one is so just. I'm certain, I don't know, it doesn't feel transactional, it just feels just assured.
What do we think to the chorus? The chorus,
everyone's gone to the movies, now we're alone at last.
From whose perspective is that lyric delivered?
Well, if we presume that the what did we call him, the carnival barker, the marketing manager, is a person, which now I can kind of see it, like he's somewhere age-wise in between Mr. Yeah. LePage and the kids. And probably not, like, you know, embraced as a romantic partner by his peers, I'm imagining. So he's like the king of this little den with shag carpeting. And so he's excited, you know, and Mr. LePage, I don't think is like it, not fixated on him, but he's there. Like he gets to be the cool. He's aged out and it's like real sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah, it is weird because, you know, you're calling us in like, come on, come to the movies. And then so who are we talking about now that everyone's gone to the movies and we're alone at last? It is.
So, I mean, I make fun of genius.com all the time for its dodgy readings of Steely Dan songs. But someone did point out something which hadn't occurred to me before. That is this the. Does the perspective shift to the kids' parents in the chorus?
Hmm.
So they're saying everyone's gone to the movies. Now we've got a bit of alone time.
Mm.
Oh, so it's like a sick joke where the parents are delighted because they get some couple-y time. And meanwhile, their children are being abused.
Mom and dad will never know where you've been.
Yeah.
But, they'll be so glad that they got an evening off. So come on over.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, we've gone and made it even worse, haven't we?
Yeah, there's swamps within swamps within swamps.
Yeah,
in this song.
And I'd just like to say, when I kicked off things by saying how amusing I found this song, I was
come on now.
I myself was being ironic in the spirit of the song. Just wanted to clear that up.
Sure.
One thing I was thinking about this lyric was when we were doing the episode on Rose Darling, which was a good one. I mean, a good song. Ollie said something about like, oh, Steely Dan, they've got this. Ollie went off on a little rhapsody about how Steely Dan are so wonderful because they just have these names that imply like a whole life or something, you know, like a novelist's eye or whatever. Is Mr. LePage, is that an exact, like, does what does the name Mr. LePage conjure up? Because I feel like I can, I feel like I can see him.
Okay, me too. Like, what do you, I want to know what you see.
I see Donald Fagen in a crumpled jacket. Just a shabby man in a crumpled jacket. Kind of old school. Maybe he's got like a handkerchief in the breast pocket, you know, but everything's like worn out. You know what I mean? How about you?
I definitely see like kind of greasy despite attempts to like maybe clean up and smell good, but there's just this, you know, the sheen. And then, and then definitely like some kind of socks and athletic slip on sandal kind of thing. Like just, I can't.
Right.
Yeah. And that would not be mutually exclusive for like the jacket that you're seeing. It could be all of that, I think, could work together.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he went to a meeting the day before and then he didn't change out of his smart clothes. He just slipped on some athletic sandals. Yeah. Yeah.
I was one Steely Dan fan site that someone had said that LePage was a type of glue at the time. And so because kids can't drink yet, they're not old enough, there was like a glue sniffing. And it goes along with the sound of the music after they, you know, come on, and it starts to get that really zoomy in and out sound. It's the sound. It kind of sounds like the feeling you get when you are sniffing a glue or that is.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So these victims of grooming are also all on glue.
Well, you found another song, sounding, right? It's very a little out of it kind of sounding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Well, yeah. There's certainly the, like you say, evil carnival hall of mirrors.
Yes.
Feel in this song, whether or not it's a brand of glue. You could certainly surmise from the music alone that drugs are involved, I think.
Yes.
So Anne and Rachel, have you've heard the demo of this song?
Yes, I have not.
Okay. I just the demo is so upbeat and groovy.
It is. And you know the background sound. Singers on it are the musicians from the Turtles.
Ah.
And so it sounds so clean and different. I mean, it's such a lovely, you know, yeah, they did. It does sound very different. I agree. I almost like it better with the lyrics, the demo version, the one they first recorded.
Do you? I wonder why they held off from recording it for so long and why they changed up the music so much. Like there's a conscious decision there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if they were thinking like this goes a little bit too far.
Yes, I think so. I think it was too gross. Yep. Yep, it was
and
a step too far.
And the happy, dancey original arrangement was like, no, we can't have that. We've got to inject some swamp into its face.
Yes, I think they had to dirty it up a little bit or make it sound creepy it up, maybe. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. I think they were just messing around when they did the demo, you know, and, you know, a bunch of musicians getting together and doing this. It's self-amusement and, yeah.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting from this is that they were low on material during the recording of Katie Lied.
Well, I don't know, because for all of this song's sins, right, I'm going to play my cards here. It's like it's quite a catchy song, you know. It's not like it's not like they were like, oh, we've got to go back to another, you know, I don't know what the shit on this on side two of Pretzel Logic. Sorry, any Pretzel Logic fans, but. You know, they were clearly digging in the cesspits by that stage for material. Mm. And this doesn't feel like that. It's got an interesting arrangement. It's got like a catchy chorus. It's got slinky chords, you know? So I don't think it's grasping for material, but they obviously thought long and hard about how to present this material. So there's an awareness there of its stink.
I don't know, but they had studio time, didn't they? like there was the 70s. The record company were paying them to sit in a studio making music. So the fact it's very like finessed and the arrangement is well thought out, it can still be filler.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I think it's a good song musically.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I think it might be the best song they ever wrote.
No. So, earlier I mentioned Steely Dan's plush TV Jazz Rock Party, which is a TV special in the early 2000s. So we have a segment called San Francisco Show and Tell, where we each bring in something to show. What I originally wanted to do, okay, everyone's gone to the movies. I'm going to make loads of pals listen to watch this Steely Dan live show / TV special, right? That didn't happen, but because no one sent me back the survey. Oh, wait, no, I haven't explained what's happening. So I was like, get loads of people to watch it, fill in a survey about their feelings and thoughts and first impressions of this Steely Dan live show. Only one person sent it back to me. So what I originally wanted to do was give loads of like data and statistics and maybe charts, you know, pie charts and things about this, the newcomer's take on Steely Dan, but that didn't happen, right? So all I can give you is some qualitative research with a sample size of one, right? But maybe you'd be interested in hearing a newcomer's take on Steely Dan. This is from someone who's I think his father enjoyed Steely Dan, but this is what he feels after sitting through like a 2-hour Steely Dan live show.
Hang on, who did this?
Well, I don't want to give. He hasn't given me permission to name him. So
do I know him?
Yes. Yes.
You just say it and then we'll bleep it?
Shane Murphy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice man. Nice man.
So I asked, how did Steely Dan's plush TV Jazz Rock Party make you feel? He said, mainly irritated and undernourished. He said, I always have the same feeling when listening to Dan, which is okay, but when is it really going to get going? I felt the songs largely meander and don't arrive at a satisfying musical destination. So, yeah, glowing
brutal
review.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's far more brutal than you've ever been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think of the fans? He said he got the impression they were not the most invested fans in the world. They could have easily been drawn away from the party if they'd seen a decent pizza offer in a window on the way to a venue. What was your impression of Steely Dan as people? Terribly conceited. The whole bit
that's good.
They did, talking about past members, finding out why they felt salty. It seemed cheap. Interactions like that just perpetuate their smugness. And he rated it. He rated his enjoyment level as 3 out of 10. His boredom level as 7 out of 10. And how likely are you to recommend Steely Dan's plush TV Jazz Rock Party to a friend or colleague? He said 1 out of 10.
What did you give him as an incentive to do this? So he watched a 2-hour.
Yeah, I didn't expect him to do it. I mean, that was maybe the problem with my kind of research methodology, which is to send out these surveys on a Saturday and be can you go away and watch a 2-hour Steely Dan live show and then send it back to me on Monday?
Yeah. Big ask.
Yeah, I left it a bit late.
That's small sample size. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But hey, is a sample size of one, isn't that better than a sample size of none?
Yes. And I have to say that qualitative research was quality. Those answers really universal appeal. I mean, really understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think conceited is the word because
and
I think
undernourished. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think I always fall back on like self-satisfied or smug to describe mm-hmm. Steely Dan. But I think conceited is more nail on head because obviously they are smug and self-satisfied, but like there's a sort of terrifying conceit that they're just
terrifying conceit.
Yeah.
It feels like part of a cycle in which when you get to conceited, you're covering for something, or there's something dark and wounded, like just. Mm.
under the surface, which feels different than, I think, than smug or self.
Yeah.
Conceited is like, oh, God.
Yeah, yeah.
It's story time, folks. Dean Stevenson has been living in a makeshift camp after fleeing the collapse of civilized society. However, last episode he ventured out to find the streets empty, then sequestered himself in the abandoned office of his old friend Dr. Wu. In this installment, we catch up with Dean's sister Kat, who works for Edmund Beryl, one of the grey men whose financial chicanery has caused all this mess.
Part 6. Everyone's gone to the movies. In the room where the grey men had met and changed the world, the lights were still dim and the clock still ticked. But there was a new noise, the click-clack of typing. Kat was working away on Edmund's personal computer, searching. She was sweating, her palms making it hard to make smooth keystrokes. She searched through files with folders hidden in folders hidden in folders. It was crude. It was similar to the way a teenager hid porn from their parents. It was safe to search here, in this room. Edmund hardly ever used it, and he was away, had taken the helicopter to Mr. Tusk's compound, supposedly to watch a movie. That's what the ultra-rich did with their spare time, when they were old and no longer useful except as cash repositories. There was no police force to take incriminating evidence to. No more news outlets that weren't already controlled by the right people. There was no system to bring down Edmund except one. The source file. Hidden, encrypted, and jumbled with unreadable code. The kind of code that would create a blockchain to protect the most wealthy and powerful people in the world. Kat searched through folders, all named after Edmund's grandchildren and shell companies. The trick would be to find the folder not associated with Edmund. That's how Edmund thought. That's what would signal him. He knew he'd forget anything familiar, but something he'd never heard of, something that stirred no memories, that's where Edmund would keep it. But then she found a folder named Catherine and clicked on it.
This song is, you know, it has plenty to dislike about it, and, you know, and whatever. The atmosphere of this episode has largely been negative towards Steely Dan, which is fine. You know, that's the context we're in, right?
Mm.
You have ran with this Fagan. You have ran with this suitor.
Yeah.
But just last week, you were describing Donald Fagan as like a wounded lamb. You were like, all he's just a shy, wounded lamb who doesn't know how to talk to people. All I want to do is go into his pen like a shepherd and stroke his little lammy head and nurse him back to health.
Right. Did I actually say that? Because I did have quite a lot of wine.
You were one bottle of wine in, yeah.
I think he is a wounded lamb, but wounded lambs can be pricks, you know. They can manifest their woundedness in an aggressive, conceited way. Like the whole vibe I get from Fagin is that he is shit scared. He's just scared of everything. You just look at his body language when he's like, even on stage, he just looks so like uncomfortable in his own skin.
And you want,
whereas I feel like Becker, who I know less about, but he just strikes me as just a bit of a prick, you know. Whereas Fagin is like a sort of like disillusioned romantic who doesn't know how to deal with it, so he just spits scorn.
Yeah.
So Anne and Rachel are nodding in agreement. Ollie is just looking completely stolid, just like expressionless.
Yeah, that's sinking in. Like he spits scorn from a mm-hmm. place of maybe not like woundedness, but more so like failure.
Mm.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking what I was actually turning over in my head is how that fits with something like Ricky and how we talked about Ricky. And the kind of, you know, you don't know your mind. I am the all perfect male who will eventually have his way sort of attitude.
Mm.
I think it does tie in, but in the same way, but I'm trying to think of an archetype to explain that. And it's kind of like the, oh God, what have you made me do?
Well, look, it's been a couple of,
What I was about to find myself saying is it's a bit of an incel attitude.
I was just about to say.
But you've made me say that after you've called Donald Fagen an incel so many times. Yeah. You've led me through this hedge maze.
Yeah, he's got this Bible. Are, yeah. He doesn't get it. Like, I mean, I'm not even ugly. I'm not my friend over here. I mean, what's wrong with me? I don't get it. Like, he doesn't care to understand. He doesn't care to listen. He's not going to try to understand you because you don't know your own mind. So, but it's confusing, and yet there's no buy-in to discover, or he has no curiosity about women.
Yeah, yeah.
He's certain he knows exactly what women are, and he has zero curiosity about them, and that's why he's failing, and he has no idea why he's a loser in love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
couldn't agree with you more.
Slam or scam.
It's time to slam or scam. I have a feeling I know where this is going, and also I really don't want to go first. So, guests first. Is this good royal slam or bad royal scam?
I'm gonna go royal scam.
Scam.
Scam. No hesitation.
No hesitation.
No hesitation. I mean, I'd ask you to explain yourselves, but I think you've...
yeah, you already have. Yeah.
Meticulous detail.
Just roll tape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Andrew.
I'm going to say it's a soft slam.
Oh.
Now, the reason for this is that it marks a mini watershed in my understanding of Steely Dan, which is one thing I've really struggled with them, is that Ollie keeps telling me that they're funny. And they're not funny. They're not a funny band. Every time Ollie points out to me an ironic line or whatever, I'm like, that's not funny. I don't think this song is funny in the sense that, like, child abuse is funny. Just want to clarify. But for the seventh time, I do not think child abuse is funny in any context. However, this song really, really caught me off guard, and it made me laugh a lot. And for that reason alone, I feel like it can't be a royal scam. I sat through it. Ollie's looking at me with revulsion. Last episode, we did Dr. Wu. I listened to Dr. Wu like 5 or 6 times, completely stony-faced. My mind was a sort of undisturbed pond. Like, there was no ripple of emotion or anything. This song made me feel something, something a little confusing, but it made me feel something nonetheless. So I would say it's a soft slam. And from this moment on, I will never listen to it again.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is terrible what I'm about to do. What I'm about to do is create a united male front, because I also think this is a soft slam.
Right.
Because it's groovy. groovy song.
I've never seen you look more sheepish.
With a catchy chorus. Well, I feel like Steely Dan are thinking all of this conversation has been for naught. We have achieved nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, at least there's no misogyny in this one. I mean, the genders aren't, you know, I mean, really, it's just kids. It's just kids, that you know? Is, I mean, yeah. It's probably a bunch of boys. So, I mean, yeah, you know, there you go.
Yeah, small mercies.
One day, these questions will be answered in a splendid exegesis.
As I said before, I cannot wait to eventually, you know, see Steely Dan live, whether it's in South Central Minnesota or you're on your world tour to the UK.
Absolutely.
But where can people find out about you or even see you live? Have you got any gigs coming up?
There's nothing on the books right now. Best place to keep up with us is the Facebook fan page, Steely Dan.
Great. It's just occurred to me that we're not going to get around to editing this for months anyway. So if you did have a gig, you'd just be shouting it into the void.
Yeah. Maybe you could announce a gig now and then tell the promoter, and then the promoter will have to book it in.
No, it's been great having you, and thank you for thank you for having us and sticking around.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And thank you so much
for listening.